Off the Ball, GAA.
So we had respect for them, but I think we knew that because Kilkenny played at the brand of hurling they played, it suited us playing them too as well. Like, we kind of play a similar brand, direct style, you know, skillful players. So it was just a matter of could we front up physically and outwork
join
them.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.
All right, you're very welcome along. Tuesday morning, it says there, so it must be right. Tomás Mulcahy is going to join us at 8:15 to talk about the Red Storm rising. Cork are back. Is that how you're framing this one?
Yeah, never went away.
Jamie Tracy is going to pick his team for the Ireland game at the weekend. And then the Green Scene with Matthew at 9:15. The return of Sammy Smodic. It's in the papers this morning. Sammy and Hamer have sat down, broken bread, had a conversation about whatever it was that happened at his previous club. And now that he's playing 90 minutes back to back, everybody's like, ooh, I need you back in the squad. Everybody happy to see Sammy back? Or would you like a little bit more detail on what exactly happened? The rumours of a rift with his Republic of Ireland teammate, a rift is how it's phrased, have been played down. Ah, no, it definitely wasn't that. Because if it was, well, you don't watch your type around here. So,
well, it depends what, when Kieran McKenna was on about this culture issue that you just referred to there. Depends what that is. If the detail of that emerged, then it would definitely form an opinion on it. The truth is, though, that we are lacking up front. So, I mean, I do kind of welcome him back from a footballing perspective. Yeah. So, Adam Ida, non-contender this window, right?
Came on
against Hungary in the game. Johnny Kenny, though, we'll touch on all this, obviously, in further detail later on. Johnny Kenny scored at the weekend, though, for Bolton, which is good. But we've less depth now than we did then. So I would welcome him back on that front.
Cian Levy scored last night in the stoppage time for St. Pat's. Important Pat's to get two wins. Close start of the season, everyone was like, oh, is it going to be a hangover from last year? But it's not. It's a new St. Pat's.
It's a weird one, really. I mean, so there are 5 goals in 2 games they would have conceding any. But kickoff time on Friday, they hadn't scored. So the last 2 games, a big turnaround. Now, they were knocking on the door repeatedly in this match. Galway held out for a long time. But the goal,
it's great,
magnificent, it's great for people who haven't seen it. You'll get this on YouTube, St. Pat's Galway highlights from last night. Bang on 90 minutes, Cian Levy. He's a beautiful player, they're number 10. He went on a great run in the first half, actually. You know, we talk about the lack of excitement in the Premier League. You know, you saw in the League of Ireland last night, Cian Levy. They're one of those ones that were, you know, one of my favourite ways of watching a fella go around a fella is knocking a pass and running onto the other side. Do you know that one? You don't see it too often.
Chris Waddle.
Love it, right? Anyway, Levy did that and caught in again. And he does that. We've seen that a couple of times this season. But he was actually a symbol of what was happening with Pats, was that he was doing some beautiful stuff. And then when it came to actually pulling the trigger, he either wouldn't or he got it wrong. He certainly got it right last night. Max Mata came on, was very good up front.
Real Madrid were beaten at home last night by
Getafe. Do you remember when Pepe lost his mind that time for Real Madrid? Remember about 15, 20 years ago?
Well,
this one particularly stands out. This is where he got really solidified his reputation.
Did he kick someone in the back? Was that
in the head a couple of times?
Yeah.
On the ground.
Was anyway, banned for 10 matches.
Rudiger did a little bit of a tribute after last night to that.
Oh, I saw he like kind of kneed him, yeah. It was dreadful.
Yeah, that's Antonio.
It's actually 17 years ago when Pepe did that. Would you believe?
Was it
17 years?
Was it also against Getafe?
The video of it is age restricted on YouTube. I can't actually just tell it.
It's an assault. Like, it is 2 a.m. job.
Alvaro Arbeloa is not going to get the job full time now. Unless he wins the Champions League. But even then, I think they're like, look, Alvaro, yeah, good man. But so they'll be looking for a new manager. In the summer, will Manchester United be looking for a new manager? Who else is going to be looking for new managers? Will Spurs be relegated? Everybody's just decided that that's it. It's going to happen now. But West Ham probably need to come forward and do some good business. And they're not really capable, it seems. I had a little bit of faith in West Ham for about 2 weeks. And then the weekend, I was like...
People are mad for Spurs to go there, aren't they?
We'd like to see it, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
See
that big stadium.
The repercussions.
The championship. Yeah. Like, it is mad that it could happen. All that money in that club. Would you like to see it happen?
Not really, no. I'd like Spurs to sort themselves out, to be honest. My hope is if they do stay off, they finish 17th this season, that they'll rip it all up in the summer. Rip up the structure. Then you got to actually attract the type of player that's going to improve you. Be like, oh, this is ground zero. This is the start of it now.
Did they not already do that?
They don't. Their wage structure would limit them from actually attracting the best of the best. We saw this even the good days of Pochettino. I think they got to get rid of that element to it. But there are the ingredients there for something to work out for Spurs. And I'd like to see them stay in the Premier League. I'd like to see them sort themselves out, to be honest.
One of the big six, of course. Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, and consistently so for a number of years.
It doesn't mean anything.
How does, it's a sweet vindication, but I'd say an element of sadness for Harry Kane having left, you know? Because Harry Kane now is seen for what he is, which is great in Germany, in the Bundesliga. They appreciate him endlessly. There's marketing everywhere for Harry Kane. He can't go anywhere.
Yeah, he's a global superstar, but he was already. Yeah.
He's really, truly appreciated. In Germany,
and
for what he is.
Wasn't in England.
Well, I think there was. You occasionally still get that. Well, I don't know. But in Germany, was like, I think he's actually improved anyway. But I mean, talk about the direction that both parties have travelled. Because yeah. I think he played a preseason game under Ange Postecoglou, Harry Kane, that summer,
knowing he was leaving.
You know, that transfer was quite quiet by the measure of the player. He just announced it. I think he was going for a walk and just went to Cameron and said, "I'm going to head away here," midweek.
Yeah,
it was just gone. You know, I thought he'd be back after a year or two.
And he's in negotiations now about a
renewal. Yeah, but I think he's kind of like beginning the status of legend at two clubs.
Yeah, and he's a Ballon d'Or contender. Like, if you won a Ballon d'Or at Bayern Munich, then that's
stupendous. Status.
They need to win a Champions League for that to happen, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, but like they could do.
Doesn't get the credit for all the goals in the Bundesliga because people are like, oh, it's only the Bundesliga. Whereas, ironically, maybe all those goals in the Premier League when he was playing with Spurs. Spurs were much better there than they are now. The other newsy stuff that's happening in England, the England team has been, I don't know if it's been leaked or officially named, but Steve Borthwick has completely ripped up his backline for England's Six Nations match against Italy. Elliot Daly and Finn Smith are back to start, but nobody who started against Ireland is retained in the same position. Tommy Freeman is the only one who's going to play. Everybody else is either injured or dropped.
Yeah. So it's probably like, is it Ben Spencer at 9, Finn Smith at 10, Elliot Daly on left wing maybe, Furbank at fullback, right wing maybe.
It's Freeman. Freeman's 13.
13,
sorry.
So it might be Caden Murley maybe on the right wing.
I'll tell you exactly now when I just get to the page that I had it open that it was going
to
be.
It is great to see that though, that we've rattled them that way, that they felt that they had to change their entire backline. I know two players were injured, but.
So it's Spencer at 9, Smith at 10, Atkinson and Freeman 12 and 13, Roebuck at 14, Murley at 11, and Elliot Daly.
Fullback.
Yeah, there's Elliot Daly or Marcus Smith in. So it has been leaked as opposed to officially named. But, and the other thing, the Six Nations trophy. Burned.
Very sad.
In a car accident or a van accident. And eventually you dig in, you're like, nobody was hurt in the accident.
Where was it off to?
It was leaving Dublin,
heading out. Terrible.
Very. Yeah.
It was only the trophy that got injured.
They're very. Yeah. Yeah. No human beings were damaged or animals. At least that's what. Who knows? I mean, maybe they're.
Yeah.
They don't actually say exactly where it was or what happened or who's to blame or whether or not the insurance company's going to pay out.
They're kind of a replica, aren't they? They're not changing the design or anything like that.
They have a replica already, which they're going to obviously everything. There's loads of replicas of all the trophies, right?
Yeah.
For commercial and charity reasons, and I guess for circumstances such as this.
When it comes to trophies, does your opinion about them start about whether they have handles or not?
Well, I love the World Cup, and it doesn't.
The World Cup is the example.
What a question!
A handleless trophy, but it's beautiful.
But it's the only one I think that I like that doesn't have a handle. It's the right shape and size, and you know Maradona obviously.
It's very conducive to doing a double lift, and a kiss,
and it's the single handed
like
thing,
a head,
but
like the. Europa League doesn't have handles.
Yeah.
Conference League doesn't.
The URC has this weird dome-like shape, isn't it? It's like kind of like within.
But you can hold it though as
Mordor, and you can lift it up like
it's
that.
Like a cauldron,
I like the big ears of the Champions League, obviously. Yeah, big one. And people talk about the Stanley Cup all the time. The Wimbledon men's trophy is also a thing of beauty. It's like gold, small handles. But as soon as you win it, as soon as you go back, like, they're like, now give it back and then take this. You go home.
I'm a big fan of Liam McCarthy. I think that's a great trophy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, Liam versus Sam.
It looks great. Liam, I prefer McCarthy for sure.
Yeah.
It's a nice trophy.
And this thing,
you could do this, that's single handed. It's nice and light, you know.
Yeah.
So the plan here is to replace it with an exact replica. They won't do. They won't
like
take
it.
They won't take this opportunity to create a new design.
No, it's not Jules Rimet into whatever the one is called now. The World Cup.
What?
It's just called the World Cup, is it?
Oh, there's a name for it.
Which trophy?
The World Cup.
Football World Cup.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. No idea. Is there a name on it?
Oh, the picture of it is actually really badly damaged.
I did see a lot of people come out of the woodwork. Like, I didn't realise there was so many haters of the trophy. They all came out yesterday.
Transported from Limerick to Dublin 2 weeks ago.
Oh, it was an Irish problem.
Yeah.
Why was it in Limerick?
Probably at the
Limerick
museum.
To Dublin. So this happened on the motorway, right?
Yeah.
So someone, your man was, the driver was texting. There's loads of traffic.
We're not suggesting that for an instance.
There's a lot of traffic. it's unbelievable. I know exactly where it happened now. I'm thinking
country,
of it.
You're like, well, I was not.
No, I'm joking. It's Welsh season. I was joking.
We're not allowed. We're the only ones not allowed to talk about Wales. Everybody else is now taking the piss.
I was joking there for the listeners.
They're too shit to take the piss out of.
Duh, that was their joke. Anyway, go on.
I was going to say, I actually do like the Premier League trophy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But people aren't very hot in the Premier League at the moment. People are hating it now, you know? And statistics have emerged here. I don't know if you saw this piece, right? By Jason Burt. It's in the Irish Independent. It's published last night there. The Grumpy Man's Guide to Everything That Is Wrong with Football This Season and How It Can Be Fixed. And when he says football, he does mean the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah.
This is what we're talking about here. So for people who think that it is all corners, you know, it is all set pieces, because Reece James said this, but 90% of goals are coming from set pieces, right? Now, it's not 90%, but according to APTA, it is at its highest from corners, 138 goals so far this season from corners, which equates to just over 17.5% of all goals this season in the Premier League. And Arsenal says, I think that was their most recent was their 16th of the season.
I saw 24th in all competitions. You're talking about
Premier League. Yeah.
The 24th in all competitions, because there's another great piece where the guy who is the architect of this, their dead ball specialist or set piece specialist, is bonused every time they score.
And he's winning them the league, really.
They've gone from worst to first.
Mm.
Yeah. Revolutionised the game single-handedly. I did see that Liverpool in 2026 were ahead of them before the Chelsea game by one.
Yeah.
I saw some fella on Twitter had predicted before the game, it's like, it's grand, we're going to score two against Chelsea and retake that spot.
So
Slot is in the papers today saying...
So Slot, he did a press conference yesterday, they actually played it last night.
He hates football.
Yeah, he hates football. And so I think three of Liverpool's five goals are in set pieces. And he's like, well, you just have to play in it. That's what football is now. You just have to play in set pieces. But in terms of ball and play time, which is actually a very good metric, because they did this in rugby recently, right? They did the ball and play time. They wanted to fix this. So it's only 55 minutes, 27 seconds ball and play time in the Premier League this season.
That actually seems quite high. In Serie A, they used to flash that up and it would be like 12 minutes a half.
Yeah, but I suppose it's higher standards. For context, anyway, it's the lowest since 2009-10 ball and play time in the Premier League.
Really?
Now, so this thing about the Premier League being boring now, right? I remember... The discussion around that was the start of the 2005-06 season when Chelsea were about to retain the Premier League under Jose Mourinho. The very start of that season, there was talk of that too, that this is going to be dull.
Yeah.
And I can't remember it in the intervening 20 years. Was there ever a time when this commentary has emerged? Because this commentary is now mainstream. Like, this is kind of the thing about the Premier League right now, sitting here today, is it's not very good. It's a bit dull. And this is probably the most prominent that conversation has been in 20 years. And at the same time, right, I can't tell you convincingly who's going to win the Premier League.
Yeah, you were saying just yesterday you were enjoying the Premier League.
There is a title race.
So,
amidst the mundanity, there is actually an unpredictability about the outcome.
I thought there was some great goals at the weekend, though.
Well, it's funny you say that, because the positive side of it, right, is the number of goals scored.
Yeah.
34 across 10 games. Now, Burnley and Brentford can get a goal start there, big time.
7, wasn't it?
And then that also brings us into the VAR discussion, which is VAR is being implemented incorrectly. So Burnley get 2 disallowed goals in injury time in that game against Brentford. I don't know if you saw them, but I think the Jadon Anthony one was like particularly draconian in its measure of VAR. His shoulder was offside.
Right.
Now, I thought they were doing the whole 5 centimetre thing. I thought it had to be a more a substantial part of the body to actually have a discernible advantage.
The scoring part is the current rule.
Yeah. Now, he had a body part that would be contentious if he had scored, because his teammate Ashley Barnes went on to score via a handball, which was given. I think they looked at that for 5 minutes because they couldn't decide if it was handball or not. So I think there's a measure. There's 2 things going on, right? There's the set piece dominance, illustrated by the best team in the country at the moment.
Yeah.
And there is VAR ruining the fun for everyone, in that the vast majority of goals that are scored now, the vast majority, there is a hesitation as a watcher. Is, will this be allowed? They're going to look at something here. And I think it's combined into people being truly fed up with the product. Doesn't mean people will stop watching.
No, I heard them talking about it last night on Arthur's debut on the news round.
Yeah, it was a very good. Like, there was a really good debate about it, wasn't there? It was Owen had to play defence for Arsenal.
They were,
and there was 3 attackers on him.
The conclusion was that Arthur will hate watch, which is fair enough. Not stopping watching, but hate watching wears off after a while, right? You do.
I actually don't mind watching Arsenal.
I don't
as much as the seemingly the average person these days, as in the mean is, I hate watching them.
Yeah.
I actually don't mind them. I'd be more annoyed now with the likes of a Newcastle and a Spurs. I find Newcastle a bit tedious to watch. I think they should be a lot better than they are. I find Spurs incredibly dull to watch.
Yeah.
Whatever about them languishing in the relegation zone, whatever about that drama, I actually just don't enjoy watching their games. They don't play very good football, and they haven't for many years. And you'd always back Spurs to do a bit of that for you. Kind of entertain you.
I give them a bit of a free pass in that they're in free fall and third manager in 9 months and, you know, loads of interest.
Well, watch when Spurs are trailing in a game. Just watch their response to it. There's like complete lack of imagination and creativity and even desperation to get back into it, because the very minimum you expect is a bit of panic. They don't even have the courtesy to call an emergency.
The players.
Yeah, there's no definitive response here. Like, you know, they had the 2-2 against Man City a few weeks ago, which was amazing under Thomas Frank. And I was like, geez, maybe there is something in the Spurs side. And then they had that Fulham game, and they're like, Fulham are a good side, but Fulham were like comfortably superior to Spurs.
Yeah.
You know?
With the set piece thing, right, is the onus, like, I know people are saying that there's wrestling going on that's going unpoliced. Like, why don't defenders just drop to the floor? I've been pulled back, I can't compete for the ball.
Well,
like, why isn't that happening?
I agree with you. Because remember, we had John Massan last time, and we put that to him, Ger, right? We said, the problem is, right, if you don't go down as a player, i.e. in many average viewing time would be seen as diving or going down easy. If you don't do that, you're not going to get the free. And John Mass, as in former Premier League referee John Mass, acknowledged it.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. And he actually said, you don't want to be the referee who penalises when a player stays on their feet. So that is a huge conundrum that we have. So, like,
you're incentivized.
You have to go down. You have to play your part in getting what you want.
Yeah.
A bit like Mateus Cunha against Lacroix at the weekend. Now, Lacroix pulled him back, right? I'm sure if he really actually wanted to, Cunha could have stayed in his
face. Oh, yeah, totally, yeah.
You know, but of course he has to go down. And if he didn't go down, he wouldn't have got what he got, which was the ultimate reward, double jeopardy, penalty and red card. So you have to play the game, so to speak.
Yeah.
But you have a cohort of viewers, particularly, generally speaking, an older generation who are really turned off by modern football because of their perception of diving. And sometimes it is an out-and-out dive. But a lot of the time, you're just playing the part to ensure you get what you want, because the referees aren't going to give it otherwise. So to your point, I think you're spot on. I think if lads started going down in the box, it would look ridiculous and it would be infuriating for the viewer.
Yeah.
But it would be good for them.
And I think it could solve the whole issue then, because if it does look ridiculous, then it might be just, okay, we need to do something about this now. We need to just cut out the wrestling altogether. If lads are just falling over in the box and every corner just ends up as a free out, let's just cut it out, police it properly, go back to what it was. Because there's two things about it. It's ugly to watch, but then it's also just, it's not really football either. Like the wrestling in the box and the pulling and dragging. Like,
no, and the rules are strong enough to be able to protect, to prevent that. I don't really understand why they've allowed that to happen. It seems, it seems like they took their eye off the ball on that one. Ireland obviously playing tonight in Tala.
Yeah.
Against France. Obviously, we beat France in Cork. And that was, France were, may have had their eye off the ball a little bit, but we put in our best performance.
It was Julianne Russell's night
in a long time.
Yeah. She'll be on the show tomorrow. Parking, tomorrow morning.
Yeah, she'll be on, yeah. Yeah.
So
this is in Tala tonight.
Yeah, a narrow Tala.
So they've made the pitch as small as possible.
Are we watering the pitch?
Dimensions.
Is it raining in Tala? Who knows?
As small as possible. So it's...
it's always sunny in Tala, right?
It's a fully fit Irish squad. Again, there's actually French absences like that time in Cork there. So this is the start of the World Cup qualifying campaign now. They already have a playoff guarantee because of that victory last year against Belgium. Remember, that was quite dramatic. So this one, you have to top the group to get an automatic spot to the World Cup. So it's either top or bust in this group. But luckily, Ireland have the guarantee of a playoff anyway.
Fall back on, yeah.
This is against the French and then the Dutch on Saturday. So like Carlo Ward said in the pre-match press conference, like if that was the World Cup final, France against the Netherlands, you wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, these games are going to come thick and fast as well. They've Poland back-to-back in April, so it's going to happen very fast. But yeah, I'd be fairly optimistic going into this game. Obviously, what you're speaking about the post-show, there's a few French players out going into this game, fully fit Ireland squad. It's just kind of hard to know where they're at because we haven't seen them play. They had that behind doors game a few months ago, but since, I can't even remember the last game, it's been a long time since they played. So hopefully there's a good crowd at Tala this evening, 6:30 kickoff. But I do like the, because it was Carla Ward's decision to narrow the pitch. She's made that clear that she wanted to do that.
Yeah, she explained
it's a bit of shit house for you. I love it.
She explained it. She said, sure, if we played at the Aviva, for example, the French could be expansive and could hurt us. Now, there was the opportunity to do just that in Páirc Uí Chaoimh that time. So they played fantastic that night. But yeah, every advantage that she can have, she's taken. It's good to see. 7:30 tonight, that game.
Yeah, France heavy favourites.
Oh yeah.
Game's live and off the ball tonight with Owen from 7. So if you're out and about and you want to know what's going on, make sure you stay tuned to that.
We'll have...
actually trying to find the odds. Can't find the...
Julianne Russell and Sue Ronan on the show tomorrow morning to review it.
Ireland are 12-1 to win the game.
Yeah. Not bad. Not bad. If they can channel the Cork energy, it's a good bet.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's, you wouldn't necessarily call it a free shot, but it's unlikely that Ireland will top this group. Be an incredible achievement if they did and they'd go to the World Cup. They have that playoff anyway. So I don't know if you go, you're hardly going to go experiment against the French and the Dutch, like so, and I think Poland are the other side. So you wouldn't have too many opportunities to try something new, I suppose, at the risk of getting demolished, which you don't want for morale. So it'll be interesting, the approach.
There's a few positions to fill as well. Obviously, there was a bunch of retirements there recently, so it'll be interesting to see how we build up a bit of depth over the next few games.
Yeah. So just one more thing on the football there before we move on. Do you think Arteta definitely stays if they finish trophyless?
I think it would be very difficult to find somebody who can come in and build on, as opposed to, oh, I don't like you and I don't like you and I don't like you. We've already spent all this money. I realise that there's a bit of the fallacy of sunk cost in that, but I don't know what age you were when Man United won their first league title under Alex Ferguson, but it took many years for them to get over the line.
26.
And there is, he wasn't there for all of them. From Ferguson arriving to the Fergie day where he actually...
7.
You know, and I even just listening to the lads, Ferguson won stuff because he was brave, and it was like, yeah, but they also shat the bed repeatedly all the way up to the final day of the season. Like, they get closer and 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 closer. And then it's like, couldn't get over the line. And then eventually they do. So I think that Arsenal will be mad. They're on a specific path, and let's see what happens when they get there. Obviously, I've not enjoyed the football, considering what it could be like with the players they have, but it will be mad to come off that course now when they're getting closer year on year.
I raised that question because I was speaking with an Arsenal supporting buddy of mine at home, very, very passionate Arsenal fan. And the question I put to him was like, do you care?
Is there any other type?
Do you care that people hate watch Arsenal?
Ah, presumably no.
And he said, no, but they have to win the league because he's not enjoying the games. He said, if they don't win the league, if they don't win anything, then he would say, I think they'd make a change because he's not enjoying this at all. Because his whole point, and I think it's the point of Arsenal fans, is that there's a lot of good players in that club, actually. We're actually seeing the best of a lot of them.
Yeah, but that's the point. You look at what they could be. And look, maybe after they win a league or after they win a Champions League, what happens is there's a surge of confidence and they relax into the talent they have a bit more. Who knows? But they do... For their own sakes, they need to get over it. But I think that it's easy as fans to say, move on, give me what's next. But who's next? Who's guaranteed to be better than Arteta?
Yeah, that's always a big question. It doesn't necessarily mean you don't change the
I know you're not
manager.
A football director, so you don't know the exact nuances of all of the available talent in world football about the coach, but it's a really knee jerk. I want something new, anything new.
No, but do you think that? But would you agree that's an interesting position to take as an Arsenal fan?
Yeah, but it's ultimately pointless. It's incoherent rage.
Well, it was actually delivered in such a measured way, which was it was definitely
And the answer is who?
You know, this isn't very enjoyable to watch.
Tell me who you're
going to. If you're going to play like this, then you have to come away with lifting one of those trophies that we're talking about.
In fairness, he's just built a load of squad depth and he's had one season with it. If to come very close again, I think you at least give him one more season with this brand new squad.
I think it would be outrageous to sack Arteta if they didn't win anything.
And I don't think that I don't think they will. I think that they're obviously Wenger had so much credit in the bank and the stadium was being rebuilt and every year he qualified for the Champions League and they were able to finance the new stadium, which has given them the firepower to build his current team. So as clubs being run, you would say it was run very well. Wenger had some blind spots around goalkeeper and centre-back, which he could have fixed and maybe they would have been able to compete for a league title. Who knows? The bit where you think that they need to just calm down is they're one of the best squads in world football. They're not particularly exciting to watch, but they're very successful at the minute. Are there many other managers in the world who will give them the opportunity to win the league? So we're sitting here the 3rd of March and they have a significant lead at the top of the table. We also feel like maybe this is the end of Pep this year. Who knows what Liverpool are going to be like next season? There's a period, there's an opportunity here for Arsenal to be the best squad, the most stable.
What if they win the league, right? Playing the way they're playing now. And then he says, what's better than winning the league? Winning it twice, retaining it. So I'm going to do the same thing next year. Because winning is a habit, you know? You started being addicted to these trophies.
Then the Arsenal fans will be delighted.
Suck it up.
Everybody hates us, we don't care. They're the new Millwall.
Football changes though, people will find out a way to defend those corners eventually. That won't carry on forever.
I think that they'll start policing.
Yeah,
you touch somebody in the box, it's a foul.
But they have stopped penalising that entirely.
But they will, restart that.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. Maybe Arsenal will be forced to play differently. But have Arsenal changed the way they play under the 6 years of Arteta?
They have changed a bit, yeah. And obviously the squad has changed and the game has changed, so he has adapted.
Yeah.
Dermot Keenan saying Cesc Fabregas, next Arsenal manager.
Oh, Como boy. Yeah.
It's actually not a bad shout at all in a couple of years' time if they're looking for one.
It's interesting. Look, it's an interesting...
Cesc was linked with Man United. I mean, he's got great agents.
It's an interesting... Great agent. He's doing a good job.
He's a good manager.
He could easily get the Chelsea job next as well, Chelsea fans love him too.
He's got links.
And that's an interesting insight that you have, right? That you're kind of the absurd tone is like Arsenal fans don't realise how good they have it if they're complaining about this. But there is, absolutely that feeling out there.
Oh, no.
Is this the right way to go about winning?
I don't think it's absurd that they don't like the football they're watching. I think you are so far stepped in blood that they've come this far and they've got closer now than they've ever been with this guy. And if, for whatever reason, between now and the end of the season, and it's not going to be a collapse, it's just going to be the City reel off.
It would just be, you know, they might drop stupid points here and there, but it won't be like, no one's going to hammer Arsenal.
I think he's maturing.
No one's going to hammer him.
People don't hate him this year for giving out about referees all the time and giving out about the conspiracies to get him the way there has been in previous seasons. So I think that's improved.
Yeah, I suppose if he had this kind of natural warmth about him and charisma that oozes, I think people would be a lot more tolerant of the football that's played. But I don't know, look, is it an absurd notion to think that Arteta will go if Arsenal just miss out on all four trophies? So it starts with the League Cup final against Man City later this month. And for argument's sake, they go deep into the Champions League, deep into the FA Cup, and they lose the Premier League. This is like Bayer Leverkusen in 2002.
Imagine.
Where they get to everything and they win.
Unholy collapse.
That'll be... The Champions League final is there for them right now.
Yeah.
Or semi-final.
If you get to the Champions League final, you can't be sacking them.
No.
Especially when you're competing in the league as well. Definitely if they were like eighth in the league.
Yeah. But do you think it's an absurd notion that his job will be questioned in the summer if they went without winning a trophy?
Well, talk about it, right? Yeah, they won't credibly say he needs to be replaced, having reached three finals and finished second. All you can ask is to be in the mix and then see what happens. See how the cards fall. Will we do some rugby?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We have a couple of videos there to play.
The Perpignan communications team are getting widely praised. The Perpignan fans were like, look, I don't care if we get relegated. So at least we can say we're world class when it comes to communications. Oh, there you go. Is that Oisin Langan's commentary of the St. Pat's goal last night? Luke McGrath signed for Perpignan.
Yeah.
And they've got amazing footage of him being born and going to Lansdowne Road with his dad. Have a look at this.
What I do remember very clearly, though, is that day in April 2003 when my father took me to see a rugby match. I was a 10-year-old kid sitting next to my dad in the legendary Lansdowne Road Stadium. I didn't understand everything about rugby yet, but I understood one thing. Intensity. The noise. The song. On the way home after the match, my father said to me, "Did you see Perpignan? Remember that team. Those are men who play with their hearts for something bigger than themselves." That sentence never left me. The years passed, I grew up, I wore the Leinster jersey for 13 years. I had the honour of representing my country. I played in a World Cup, I experienced victories, 7 URC titles, great European Cup. But also the silence after defeats. I learned what it means to last, to endure, to be there when it matters. And then one day, the phone rang, Perpignan. At that moment, I didn't think about contracts or distance. I thought about that 10-year-old kid, about his father, about that match. I understood then that some stories are not written by the chance. Sometimes an entire career is born from a memory. Mine brought me here. My name is Luke McGrath, and I'm not coming to Perpignan to end a story. I'm coming to honour one. Sembre and Davant, my Marirum.
I was laughing at if he had stopped as I'm not coming to Perpignan.
And finished there.
Class
after all that. I'm staying.
I'm not love for
Jordan Belfort style. Well, new contract. It was very good. I didn't expect that, lads. I have to be honest. I didn't expect such an emotional video. Luke McGrath, fine player. Was the highlight of the weekend for Leinster there last Friday.
Score try, yeah.
When I saw the news yesterday, the news before the video, I thought, oh yeah. Good move for everyone.
Yeah, but I didn't expect kind of what a followed. Routine move for like a scrum half at age 33. But apparently there's a bit of history behind it. There you go.
It is a pretty cool story, to be fair. All jokes aside. I do love it.
How can I not remember the French Atletico Madrid player who did the whole thing and the decision was I'm staying at Atletico
Antoine
Madrid?
Griezmann.
You were channeling your Griezmann there where you're like,
that was great too. I love that. And then he went.
He did, yeah, what a moron. He's still pricking around going, oh, am I going to go to America or not? I don't know. Am I going to America?
Do you know he's obsessed with Football Manager?
Griezmann?
Yeah. And he brings big, a lot of small teams. He deals very well with them.
He's big on video games. And he used to play a bit of Fortnite and all that when it was...
In fairness, Perpignan, right? I'm against AI creation. So there's like pictures of, if you're our radio listeners there, there's pictures of a young boy and, you know, it's very high quality footage. And then it cuts to grainy footage of Perpignan fans in the crowd. I suspect they didn't get a million extras in the background to pretend that it was it.
No.
So, you know, Perpignan communications team, fair play to you, but you are accelerating the demise of the planet.
Totally.
No, you know, but also best of luck to you.
Totally. Great addition.
It is a great move, and Perpignan, like, what a amazing part of the world to live
in. Class.
Like, yes, please, I'll have 2 years at the end of my career out there.
He's going to get to throw the ball to the young Tuilagi. The youngest of the Tuilagis, the 6'6" second row that plays for France.
Oh, second row, right.
Great addition to the Green 15 as well. We keep tracking him next season, but he's going at the end of the season, so he still has a few months left with Leinster. But
I think there's a good chance that he ends up as a good top quality coach, somebody who, you know, Leo Cullen has always obviously rated very highly. And he managed to hold Jameson Gibson Park off for a little while. You know, at Leinster, they were still picking him ahead of Gibson Park when Ireland were like, no, we want Gibson Park. So he's very, very good.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of years in Catalonia is going to help him to become a coach, I think.
So there's Leinster Player of the Year back in 16-17.
More of this, the better, from, I'd say.
Yeah. Like,
send them off at 22-23. Let them go off and...
Well, if you send him off to Perpignan 22-23, he might not come back. That's the only thing.
That's too nice.
Nice place.
You know.
Play rugby, isn't it?
Come back and play for Ireland.
This is the cruel pull factor of being capped by Ireland, isn't it?
Yeah.
That prevents so many lads going abroad earlier.
Yeah, but it's like the...
I think it's such a ridiculous rule.
It's like the ego of the inter-county manager who's like, you can't go back and play for your club in the league game. You're going to sit on my bench. You're going to learn more from watching me prowl the sideline, shouting at lads to... You know, pull on it. It's like, oh yeah, great. I feel like I've been educated there, pal. Thanks.
I see both sides of the argument there. Like, with the cap rule or the international rule, like, it makes absolute sense when we've only four teams to preserve and hold on to as many players as possible. But then there are going to be guys who fall through the cracks and their careers suffer as a result. So, I don't know. There's a balance to strike, but they haven't found it.
Was the
obviously.
Big pull factor of keeping everyone here, right? Keeping everyone in Ireland is just so that you can watch them better. Because, I mean, there would be the rest and the control, isn't it? It's the control element of it, too. You can have a word with the manager of the province being like,
minutes.
Yeah, leave them out, you play them here. So there's an element of control. You want to control all these players, the IRFU. But there is a world, too, where the scouting is now of an adequate level worldwide that you could keep an eye on. If Luke McGrath was going there at 23 years of age, and he was a viable option as scrum half, that you'd keep an eye on him at Perpignan.
Yeah.
Some Paul O'Connell goodness for you. All the angry people in our comments about how Paul O'Connell, why aren't you talking about Paul O'Connell? Oh, the line out. Oh, there's a conspiracy to protect Paul O'Connell. You've all shut up now, haven't you? Where are you now, lads? Let's be having some Paul O'Connell.
Matt, last year, you know, we turned up in the Millennium Stadium and they in a very short period of time, you had them playing some really good attacking rugby. We've seen it already, how their forwards are interplaying, they're passing a lot more at the line, and they attack short sides really well, they flatten up. So I think they've probably got a coaching group that really know what they stand for, and, you know, they have really good players, they've really good athletes. They just need that direction and guidance from a good coaching group, and I think they're going to get that. And then they just have to, you know, I know they're going through tough times in the last few years, but they're still going to have to go through them, but they'll get better. You know, I was thinking this morning about some of the players that have left, that the Sam Warburtons of this world, Justin Tipperick, Alan Jones, the influence they have around the playing group is absolutely massive. You know, we've experienced it ourselves here with the likes of Johnny, Peter Manny, Connor Murray going, guys that are in how they train and how they prepare and how they care about the team, the difference they make to everyone around them is phenomenal. So I'm sure a few of those leaders are going to begin to emerge now from them over the next few years.
Yeah, over the next few years. But they are 27-point underdogs. We are talking about a team here who are coming to Dublin to get hammered, according to every bit of received information that we've got so far.
Yeah.
Like, the improvements are barely perceptible.
Yeah, I didn't like... I'm looking at that team and I think about the best players there. They're all quite young, which is a great place to be, especially for them, since it's been so long since they've been successful. But like, there are green shoots. You look at the club scene, to be fair to them, in the URC, they're all playing very well, bar maybe the Dragons. But any place you saw with Ulster at the weekend, or even the Dragons going there, teams rarely get a win coming out of it. So it's not like, I don't think the players are actually awful. I think it's just the direction that they've been going in, and maybe the unsettled nature of the coaching ticket over the last 4 or 5 years probably hasn't helped. But I actually think there's a decent crop of players there, but you know, they can obviously get a lot better, and they're missing players as well. Jack Morgan, their best player, isn't available at Six Nations, so that's played its part.
Out half is injured as well.
Yeah, so yeah, and they actually have three young out halves there to choose from. But yeah, like, I think, don't get me wrong, I think we'll win that game probably pretty comfortably, but I think in the next couple of years we'll start to see remnants of the old Wales, potentially not nowhere near as good, but I don't think they'll be the whipping boys in years to come.
Really?
Personally, yeah, no, I don't think so.
Who will be?
They may not be. It may just be a competitive Six Nations.
All right.
Everyone's picking the wins. So I think Italy.
It would be better for the Six Nations if Wales actually beat Ireland this weekend. Now, we need somebody to beat France, yeah. Otherwise it's just going to be...
Well, it'd be horrible for us and potentially for the outcome, because then, yeah, obviously France just run away with it then if they beat Scotland. But yeah, it's always good to see upsets, but we don't want that this weekend, clearly. Like, we're still going for a Six Nations title and Triple Crown.
Triple Crown, Larry Goodman in the news, just like the 1980s all over again.
How many points do you think we'll beat Wales by?
14 to 17. I see it as like a...
Close scoring.
Right? 31-14.
Oh. Okay.
14 to 17 point margin of victory.
Yeah.
And is it ever tight?
Well, I'd like to see the Ireland team before I actually... can we have this conversation again when...
We can. We can bookmark your initial prediction and then the team-based prediction.
Yeah. Is it ever tight? I mean, like... Maybe. I think that Wales need everything to go for them, and they really need to be at an emotional fever pitch on the basis of being written off by everybody in Ireland. And they did that. Like, Ireland were totally complacent against them last year.
Yeah.
No, we weren't. Absolutely, we weren't. We were taking them very seriously, eye on the game after it. And people are talking about the Triple Crown now, the Scotland game, which is a week after, which, you know, classic banana skin behaviour. It's like, oh, we're only thinking about this game in the camp.
Scotland on for their first ever, not the first ever, but their first Triple Crown in 35 years, I think it is. 1990 was their last one. So... extra incentive for them to come out and beat us in Dublin. I always have a bad feeling about that Scotland game. Always,
yeah,
have a bad feeling.
No matter where it is.
Yeah, because they haven't beaten us in so long. I'm just like, they have to beat us at some stage.
That's also a 10 past 2.
Would you give up this game against Scotland now, safe in the knowledge that it will mean that in the World Cup we won't lose to them?
No. Oh yeah, giving them
just
a triple crown.
Just smash them now and smash them.
No,
then
it doesn't mean that. Well, so Ireland win the next two games, triple crown in the bag, decent Six Nations. The price to pay is that we definitely lose Scotland in the World Cup.
That could be detrimental.
Well, I think there's no chance of them beating us. Maybe there is. Maybe they go on a streak. I don't think there's any chance of them beating us twice.
They've actually such a good team. So I don't know why we're talking about Scotland now, but they actually have an incredible, like, look at their backline. It's world class. If they could just figure things out, like, Dylan Russell, one of the best tens in the world. Blair Kinghorn starts for Toulouse every weekend. Like, their wingers, they've three or four like really top European wingers. Their centre partnership is probably the best in Europe on their day. Like, it makes no sense why they can't just win games.
It's a mentality issue.
Yeah,
yeah. Like Scotland. 2:10 again. We haven't got a box office Saturday in this Six Nations.
2:10 is not bad though, is it?
We've had three
you can have
three 10 past 2s.
You can have lunch beforehand.
Oh, no, it's not a bad time. Like,
you can have dinner after.
Usually, you know, usually
you don't miss a meal.
You get a 4:45 at some point.
4:45s are actually low key.
You're 4:40 as it is this year.
You tend to be a little bit pissed by the time dinner. It's like.
I'm happy with the 2:00 because I'm working that game.
Oh, yeah.
So then I'll be finished by the time the final game comes around.
Yeah. His first Six Nations campaign, he's already complaining about the times he has to work. Look at it. Whoa.
I literally just said it. I'm happy with it.
France-England is the last game of the Six Nations. It's 8:10.
That was the one that Steve Borthwick has urged to get on the boats. Don't stop the boats. Maybe stop the boats.
There's a world when half the stadium is just empty because all the England fans have decided not to go.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.